Ladies and gentlemen, funky fools and groovy guests, my name is Jared, and with me is my beloved Anna, and my very good friend, who might be my beloved at times, Scott.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
We're on our way back from Knoxville, and we will be your hosts as we drive down I-40. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us as we discuss the three-day weekend that we just experienced at Funky Town. Today, we are going to give you our thoughts on this year's convention and talk about some games that we got to play and teach over the weekend. So with that, let's discuss Funky Town. So Funky Town had a record-setting year for their attendance this year with 338 attendees, I believe was the final count. So congratulations to them on continuing to grow.
Woohoo!
And this is a three-day weekend full of gaming. It very much follows your traditional small con structure of show up, play some games, and have a grand old time as you make friends or enemies, depending on what kind of game you're playing. But in addition to the standard show up and play, they have Game of the Hour, where they bring people in to teach a new game every hour on Friday and Saturday. And they also have a few other things that they are continuing to add to their repertoire of various items that you can participate in over the course of the weekend. It is located at the Knoxville Convention Center. It has been going on for, I want to say, over 5 years now. And it has been a joy to go to for the past 3 years. So with that, Anna, why don't you start us off? What are some new things that you saw at the convention this year? Maybe a surprise or two.
Yeah, it's always fun because, like Jared said, we've been going now for 3 years. So it's neat to see the con grow. It kept its same feeling of this is a very friendly con. You meet a lot of new people. You get to see those people throughout. Everybody we played with are great sports and very friendly.
And it does pride itself on being family friendly.
Yes, yes. And so it kept that same vibe. But the surprise for me was that several new aspects got added this year. So this year they added a kind of web extender or an app with a town hall where you could request people to bring certain games that you wanted to play. You could sign up for different games that were going to be played, and you could see what was going to be maybe for sale or things like that. So that was a new aspect that they added this year that hopefully can expand in future years. I enjoyed just getting on there and scrolling through and seeing, oh, hey, this person wants this game. Do I have that? And if I have it, I can bring it. And then when you get there, there's a way to label your stacks of games, and then people can come and borrow each other's games throughout the con, which is kind of neat. So that was a new thing they added. They added a SkyTeam simulator station. It was a really fun aspect of the con this year. There were, I think, 4 different simulator stations, and then there was one where you could sit in a real cardboard airplane with your captain's hats on while you play.
A real cardboard airplane.
Cardboard airplane, yep. That's where it was.
I need one of those in Nashville
and
in my home.
And you could sit with your captain's hats and you could play Sky Team, ladies and gentlemen. It was great. They also added D&D this year, or role-playing games. So there were several people that volunteered to be DMs, and you didn't have to be an experienced D&D player to play. These DMs were ready to walk new people through the game and teach them how to play. So that was really fun, and that was something you could have signed up for ahead of time. Or found when you were there to sit down and play and learn how to play Dungeons & Dragons. And they also expanded their social deduction game area and had several people that were running various social deduction games with large groups of people all throughout the weekend that you could also sign up for. So it was really neat to see them branching out, trying new things, but still keeping that small, very friendly convention feel.
Nice. Excellent work. Scott, did you notice anything else that Anna left off of her plethora of things? I have one thing in mind that I'm curious if you're going to bring up that's not directly related to the con, but is fascinating to watch the last couple of years. But I was curious if you had anything you wanted to add there as far as convention items that were either a surprise or new or just something that's fun to mention.
There's something I could think of off the top of my head. I did like the Funky Town. It is called the Town Hall app. But the fact that you could just pull up your phone, see the schedule, and not have to go, you know, look around for those banners, I think was a great change.
One of the things that I thought of that I was wondering if you were going to bring up, because we talked about it multiple times, was The convention itself takes place in the Knoxville Convention Center, but it doesn't have the whole convention center. So there's dance going on upstairs. There's volleyball tournaments going on in the basement, and we have a dogwood experience going on across the street. So it's a very busy and very fascinating group of people that come together.
The food trucks were not there last year. That's something that we got to experience this year.
That's true. Now, many more. There was a few more food trucks right outside the convention center, which was awesome. And I think there was a few more inside, too.
There was maybe one last year, but they had like a giant charcuterie board.
Mm-hmm.
You can make your own. And,
yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah. And they had a coffee place.
You got something else yesterday.
Italian ice. It was good.
Nice. Was it really good? Because, like,
yes.
I'm very hesitant to get shaved ice because I think I had the best shaved ice in the world in Hawaii, and I just feel like anything else is just not going to measure up.
I don't know if it's on par with a Hawaii, but it was pretty good for
Knoxville. It was good. All right. So for any of you, we'll start with Scott. Was there a game that we obviously prepped you? We were going to play some of the bigger games, and we didn't make you teach anything, but was there a game that surprised you that was not on our initial list of, hey, we're going to be playing this?
Yeah, so while you guys were teaching, I tried to engage with every one of those. And the one that I thought that we picked up is from the premise didn't seem like anything special, but it's called High Society.
That's
and
right.
We played that several times, and we laughed constantly, laughed until our sides hurt. So it just was a great time. It was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Allplay just remade that one. It's an older game, but they picked it up and revamped it. Can you walk us through just like a quick, like not all of the how to play, but just basically the premise of what you're doing?
Sure. So you have a certain amount of cards that have values from, I think it was 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, up to $25,000. You're bidding on cards that are in the center to take into your pool to score points. But there's some cards that are going to come out that are called scandals that are, you don't want those. Those are always some sort of bad as far as like having your score or a negative score. But the catch is anybody that bets on those scandals loses their money if they don't pass and take that scandal. So there's a balance there. And we saw some really interesting ways that people lost and won based off of those scandal cards. And it really adds a whole different element to it. And you've got to think through everything. You can't just be throwing down money because if you run out of cards, you lose that way too.
For sure. So, I think it was an absolute hit. And we'll talk about games that we taught here in a little bit. But it was definitely one where people were able to pick it up quickly and jumped right into it.
I agree. And it kind of surprised you too, though. Like, it surprised you the way that it played.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun watching lots of people experience that one. I think everybody was surprised by it and enjoyed it.
For sure.
Sorry. I was going to say, I felt like most tables played more than one time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you play it, it only takes like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a very quick game. And it's really funny to like find the balance in that because even though it is a quick game, you got to know when to spend your money and when not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can feel really antsy really early on. And then you're like, wait a minute. Do I want to hold on to this? And then you talk yourself out of it, and then all of a sudden you're like, the game's over. So finding that right balance is difficult.
And you were saying that Allplay just remade it?
Yep.
And so I think that we would recommend it over the original version because they've added some different cards that really kind of just vary up the gameplay, some different cards where you play slightly differently. There was one in particular, the 5. To bid on it, you have to play face down, but you have to play face down. So we had two different tables that they ran out of money on the 5 and then couldn't score at the end of the game. So it's just kind of nice that they added a few more cards where it's just not your straight bidding game, but there's other stuff to watch out for as well.
That's right. All right. So one surprise for me, we got to play it this morning. There is a new game. It is a cooperative game that's coming out. I think it has already met its crowdfunding delivery. So people who kickstarted it were able to get it. And there is a, or at least some do, because we got the final copy. But we might pre-order this because it's coming out in July this year. It is a cooperative card game called Eternal Decks. And this one comes from, I think it's a group of different people depending on where you are in the world. But it's the Portland,
Portland Game Collective.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Scott. The Portland Game Collective.
Asia.
Yeah. So this is a game from Asia. and Jay Bernardo with Cardboard East, who does a lot of Asia board game reviews, showed it to me this morning, and we all got to play. And it is a cooperative game where you have limited communication. You're trying to play cards down into the board to be able to appease these various deities or, you know, whatever they are. And they all have different rules about how you play these cards down. They're just numbers with colors on them. But the game gets very convoluted very quickly as far as where you want to be playing your cards and where other people want you to be playing your cards. Because if at any point you run out of cards, then you immediately lose the game as a group. But there's ways to add more cards to your deck. There's ways to manipulate with the rules and things of that nature. And I just found this one to be very clever. It was a major hit all weekend long. And it is super pretty on the table. One of the things, I'm curious what you two feel about this, but I guess it's like a silk cloth material is the actual board itself. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. I wish more games would do that as opposed to a big fold-out cardboard.
I was thinking the whole time while we were playing that game, because the cloth laid so flat, it was so pretty, it felt nice when you got cards off of it. But then the thought in my head was it stuck to our table because we had a tablecloth. If you were playing on a hard surface, it would slip. So I don't know how that would go. And I was also, in my mind, I was just thinking, man, would this be cheaper than the cardboard, thick cardboard or not? Or would it be equivalent? I'm not sure why more games don't do a cloth board. Or I know some games are doing like a neoprene board. I know that's more expensive.
I'm not into that. Yeah.
But yeah, the silk handkerchief. I mean, and it went with the Asian theme. So that was fun. And that's probably why they did it that way. But I was curious to why other games aren't doing cloth boards instead of cardboard boards.
Scott, any thoughts?
I just thought it looked like a piece of art. Like when all the cards were out there and the different colors. And I think it just makes it pop for sure.
No, I agree. I don't know if it probably is more expensive than cardboard, but I was just thinking about how thin it is at the end, and it like saves you some box room. So maybe you can offset a little bit of cost there. I don't know. But as a gamer, it was a very refreshing feel is all I want to say about that. So that was Eternal Dex. It is I will add a link in the description if you want to go pre-order it and take a look at all the prettiness that is this game. You can definitely check that out there. Anna, you mentioned a lot of the new things that we saw over the weekend. Scott and I have mentioned a couple surprises. Was there a surprise that you wanted to mention before we move on?
So a neat surprise for me, this isn't a game surprise necessarily. Man, people keep coming back to this convention.
It's very consistent.
So we have been 3 years now, and there's people that drive in from other places. We drive in from Nashville, but this is the only time we're driving to Knoxville to game with these people. And the people remembered us, and we remembered them, and there were several people even from last year that were like, oh, yeah, I've got your podcast sticker, you know, still, because, you know, I've been listening to it or whatever. So that was a really cool surprise. It felt like, yeah, meeting up with old friends now that we've been going for a few years now.
For sure. So let's just go ahead and segue, because I think you want to speak about that a little bit more. What is a favorite non-gaming experience that you had at the convention this weekend?
Yeah. So we were talking about that. We always try to think what other fun things happen. And really, for me, it's just the people. I love gaming with different people, getting to know different people. And there were several people that we have gamed with before, like Jared mentioned Jay. We love playing games with him. We got to play a little bit with Jared, who was also there with Bezier Games, helping out.
New guy, Jared.
We got to meet Brent, who's a Knoxville native, and he played SETI with us and Eternal Dex with us. We played two games with him, so, you know, must have liked each other at least a little bit.
A little bit.
Got to play a full game of Between Two Castles. So that's, if anybody's played Between Two Cities, that's kind of the previous release, and Between Two Castles adds a little bit, plays all the way up to 8 people. And we had played it earlier in the day, and we're really curious how it played at 8, because it's fun to get those games that can play smoothly with your larger groups of people. So we got to meet up with Clint and Tara and Emily later in the evening and play a full game of 8 people doing Between Two Castles, and that was a real blast. So yeah, I know I played games with the people, so hopefully that still counts as a non-gaming experience, but my favorite thing was definitely just getting to meet people, getting to hear people's stories. Got to talk to somebody, Riley, who said he was new to Knoxville and he was trying to find games that his girlfriend would like to play. So we talked about what she was interested in and what are some good entry level games. And that's just the fun.
Yeah.
It's getting other people involved in the hobby, sharing stories of, oh man, if you like this one, maybe you'd like this other one, or oh, you've got a friend you're trying to get into gaming. Let's strategize together and figure out the best games for them, the best themes or the best concepts that they would like. So that was definitely a favorite experience.
Nice. No, I think that totally counts. And obviously, we can't list off every single person that we interacted with. One, because I'm really bad at names. And so if I see you or you see me, I think is how I really want to say it. If you see me, come up and say hi, because I'm just really bad at names. And you can just call me whatever you want and then remind me of your name and I will call you that name. But we love hanging out with people. We love being able to see friendly faces and new faces alike. And so it is always a joy. Scott, what about you, man?
My favorite non-gaming moment that happened this weekend was the first night we went out to eat.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, this and, is so great.
We were going to learn a new game, Undergrove, and Anna was reading the rule book. And the first sentence was talking about a Douglas fir, and Jared...
Yeah, because I was like, oh, guys, this is so cool. We all get to play as Douglas Firs in this game.
And Jared leads forward. He's like, I only know who that is because I'm married to Anna.
Yes, it was quite funny.
So that turned into the inside joke, and we talked about it all weekend.
Yep, because Jared thought the Douglas Fir was a person and not a tree.
I don't know if I was just imagining something, if I was hearing somebody else's conversation, but I'm like, okay, she said Henry Douglas, and
I don't even think that's a person.
No, okay, so
Nathan Douglas is a person.
Here's the thing, and I want to check this when I get home. I think one of the mushroom books that I got you, the author's last name is Douglas.
Oh, my.
So I assumed you were talking about this, like, famous mushroom dude.
Famous Douglas mushroom dude.
I was totally... And then I just... Yeah.
What a deep well we've dug.
The lore is so deep. I 100% have already declared I am making Douglas Fir into a D&D character, and we will have to move forward with that.
So stay tuned.
Yes.
You may hear more about Douglas Fir.
A very important character. But no, I was very happy to be the punching bag all weekend long for that. Ridiculous. My favorite non-gaming moment was the restaurant that we were at for Friday and Saturday, which was Stock and Barrel, which was over
minus
on...
the Douglas Fir incident.
No,
the
no, it added to the ambiance of friendship. So I mentioned the restaurant. It was very good. We had a great time with all the different burgers that they have and drinks and all that good stuff. And also just, I don't know, I just, you know, it really made me remember, because I know there's conversations about like, why would I pay all this money to go to a convention to just sit at a table and play games when I can play games at home? But the fact is, like, it almost forces you to stop what you're doing, to take a break, go be with friends, really enjoy the weekend away. It's totally worth it. And I really enjoy that aspect of the team getting to go and just participate in both gaming and non-gaming things together for the weekend.
Agreed.
Cool. Scott, do you agree or are you tired of us?
Yep, I agree.
Very good. Goodness gracious. All right, well, Scott, you're up first. Tell us about a game that was a highlight for you from this weekend.
So my highlighted game would be Lord of the Rings, Fate of the Fellowship.
Yes, sir!
Woo-hoo!
We played that. It took about 4 hours total, which it didn't feel like that. I looked down after we had finished it. And was very surprised to see that we had been sitting there for 4 hours.
That's right.
Of course, that's including reading the rule book and getting set up and all that.
And a five-player game.
Yeah. And so...
And probably the last hour, we were just all standing up in anticipation and cheering and everything like that.
There was lots of cheering and groaning and all that.
Yeah. It was so thematic because Jared would lose hope. I almost said we, but Jared lost hope.
Whoa! That was not me!
And I was Frodo and Sam, and I pushed through. I was like, let's just play through it and see how it goes. And there were several times where we were down to one die, and just somehow pulled it off. Unfortunately, in the end, we lost by one die. So that we just, everybody, we were celebrating the whole way, and then we just all collectively went, no! but we went out to dinner, and Jared and I were just sitting there. We're like, we've got to play. We got to play again. We've got to beat it.
That's right.
And so we went back and got back to the Airbnb and played again. So we played a grand total of like 6.5 hours of Fate of the Fellowship in one day, and was so worth it. It was even
so good.
It was so good. We did beat it. We strategized better. But yeah, I love that game.
And we got it down to like a little over 2 hours, which was also really impressive for a second play.
Dude, it helped that we used the same characters, and the game has character combinations that work well together and things like that for our first
objectives.
Game. Yeah, yep. So that helped too.
We learned a lot of what we did wrong in the early game.
Yes.
And it just changed the whole thing. So I feel like we could probably next time play it with some different scenarios and make it a little harder, but I loved it. That was my first pandemic-style game, and I want to play more now.
That game is Pandemic on steroids, and I hope that not every other Pandemic game does not feel epic because of that one, but I am so thankful that I heard the people say how good this game was. I've been waiting months for this game to get back in stock, and it got back in stock like late March, and I ordered it. I was just like, I have to. I've heard so many good things. I've got to try it out, and fortunately, it all worked out because I love that game. I'm excited to talk about it more and play it more, get into some of the other scenarios. But if you are on the fence about this game, I'm telling you right now, it is every bit what everybody's saying it is.
And when they say, I also, just because when you said pandemic style, I was expecting, it's pandemic style in that you have things that you're drawing cards, and then there's a bad card, and things escalate, and they get worse and worse throughout the game. It's not pandemic style, like you don't have things that spread. You don't. I mean, it's not the exact same as pandemic. It's not reskinned pandemic.
No, it's
and
not
so
reskinned
I just want to clarify
all,
that for people, because when I first heard you say pandemic style, I was thinking, oh, I don't want to play something that's just a reskinned pandemic. It's got a lot more aspects to it. The similarity to pandemic is that you draw cards and it escalates as you go through, and it's cooperative. I would say those are the two similarities.
So the foundation is still pandemic. It has the same base structure that pandemic does.
Yes.
But it has, as far as how the pieces move and the different character powers and all of that, it's not a basic reskin. It is, I would almost go so far as to say it's an overhaul of those mechanics to give you something new that feels very Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So we're just talking about the mechanics themselves. There's pandemic similar mechanics. Yeah.
All right, Anna, what about you?
Do you want to say who makes that in case people want to buy it though?
Yeah. Fate of the Fellowship is made by, it's published by Z-Man. So we'll, I have links for all the games that we talk about. So feel free to check those out.
So I'm probably going to pick the other really long game that we played. I mean, this is just a good opportunity to do this. When we're having game nights or date nights or things like that with people, we don't pull out those games that take 4 hours because we just don't have 4 hours a lot of times.
Yeah,
and
we
so
have kids.
This is a great opportunity at a convention. We had several longer games we wanted to play, and one of those was the game SETI, which is Searching for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And so you are teams of scientists that are looking for alien life in this game. It is a very big engine building style game where partway through the game, you may or may not, you have the opportunity to discover two different alien species. And then those alien species come in and start interacting with the game in certain ways as well. So that one was just a blast to play. We had gotten a little bit of a demo of it at Gen Con in August, and I was hooked to the point that we got it for Christmas, but we hadn't gotten it. We hadn't actually gotten to play it yet. So that was really fun. That was the three of us and Brent that played that, and we were all newbies. And so it did take us about 4 hours, probably.
It took a lot of the day.
Yeah, it took a lot of the day. But we were able to get into it. We were able to get it figured out. Everybody had slightly different strategies and different things that they were trying. Everybody had fun, I think. Even the people whose strategies, you know, took longer to get going. So,
Scott, did you have fun?
I had fun. I didn't really know what I was doing most of it, but I did have fun, yeah.
Nice.
I did really appreciate that the alien races did not get added until you discovered them partway through the game. Because I think if you had had them in at the start, it already felt overwhelming as a game. There's a lot to keep track of and a lot of different things that you can do and things that will combo together as you understand more how they work. So I think it was nice that it let you play several rounds. You play over the course of 5 rounds until people pass. So you're spending actions in a round format until people pass. And then you play 5 of those. So I think that was a good aspect to it. We actually liked it so much that we went ahead and Scott bought the expansion. To
it was very kind of him.
Our study game, so thank you, Scott. And we were looking at it, and it adds some alien species that are a little bit more interactive, which is fun. It adds different player abilities, which is fun, because in the base game, you're only starting with, you'll work the same way. So definitely some really good stuff there. And so if you, have the game or don't have the expansion, that can give you some information there too. Many people at the convention were telling us that the expansion is a must-have with this game, that it adds a lot and that it's a really good one.
Yeah, it adds that same thing like in Terraforming Mars or some other games like this that are heavier. It adds that prelude mechanic where it adds on like basically a quick start guide to get you into, not a guide so much as it gives you stuff. And we're not doing those slower first turns. We're jumping right into it. And the corporations is another one that I'm really excited about, where instead of everyone being the same generic company that has scientists on the team, you are your own corporation with your own power and that sort of thing. So that's exciting as well.
Yeah, it was a blast. It was so much fun to play. And even though turns started to take a little while toward the end of the game, which happens in your big engine building style games, it was still very interesting to watch other people. So that was fun. And man, when we discovered the aliens, we were like, we did it! We discovered aliens! And we all crowded around the new rules because each alien species comes with different rules and different mechanics and how it interacts with the game. So it was really, really fun.
The other thing I was going to mention is now that we have had the opportunity to really sit down and learn it and, you know, kind of understand it better, I mean, I'm looking forward to being able to try it at home as a two-player game.
Yes.
Because I think it is going to flow a lot faster now that we have an idea of what we're doing.
Yes. And in a two-player game, it has a mechanic where kind of like a third party will do some of the discovering. So you still get to the point where you can discover things, even though there's not as much contribution to the research in a two- and three-player game. So, yeah, we were both saying, man, I'm excited to play this at two players now that we both understand it. Definitely we'll play faster than 4 hours in that case, and maybe we could get it in on a normal game night or date night.
All right, go ahead and talk about your other one.
All right, I have to talk about another one, even though Jared said only one, because I was so excited to try Undergrove. So excited that I was reading the instructions and trying to figure it out at the restaurant the first night, like Scott mentioned. And so we did get to play.
I kind of derailed that.
Yeah, and then Jared couldn't, you know, tell the difference between a tree and a person. So we just all kind of got off the rails there. But we did get to play that the next day, and I really liked it. I thought it was really fun. It's got mushrooms on the box, but really it's this, you're creating this symbiotic relationship between the mushrooms and the trees, because the trees need carbon in order to grow, and then they put off certain elements. And so it was really fun. You're creating this kind of scientific balance between the mushrooms and the trees, trying to grow your little saplings up into trees and earning things. And you're playing on a board that expands as you're laying the board, and you're laying your little tokens to be the trees and the saplings and to feed off of the different mushroom tiles, which all do different things. I really had a blast with it. It was really fun. It was really pretty. It felt scientific and kind of fun like that, which is a plus for me when it comes to board games. And it had an excellent mechanic because it also had quite a few things to keep track of, quite a few different mechanics that you could do. And so it had a really neat thing where your first time, it had player guides that walked you through the first 4 turns. And it didn't have everybody doing the same thing the first 4 turns either. It had people doing different things. So you got to see in action how all of the different steps worked. And it even like taught you some simple combos and things like that. So I thought that was a really good mechanic for a slightly more complicated game to have. It's not a terribly complicated game, but it's a little bit more than just your average. So like medium to hard difficulty game. But yeah, those were my two favorites overall.
Nice. Yeah. And SETI is published by CGE, and Undergrove, thank you, is published by AEG. All right. So
sorry.
Go ahead. No,
is there a time where I could talk about Battle of Hoth? Because that's another one that I just thought of. That
why don't you just jump right in now and be like, hey, Jared,
I want to cheat too.
Can we talk about one more?
I have one more that I would like to. It's kind of an honorable mention.
Okay.
Ian and I sat down and we played Battle of Hoth. Ended up playing four straight games, different scenarios each time, and we swapped. He was Rebel and I was Empire, and vice versa. Such a fun game. Just the units that you get to use the abilities that they have, movement, line of sight. You know, there's crevices that your infantry can't go over, and it was just a fun time. And then we played one scenario where I was the Empire, and the only way to win for me would be to destroy the shields, but the Rebels have them completely surrounded and they have the high ground. So I had to push the whole time, and then he won just by killing me. So it was sort of like I had no other choice but to push, and he could just kind of sat back and pick me off, but it was it was so much fun.
I mean, once he has the high ground, Scott, I mean, there's really nothing you can do. So
that's right.
Awesome. No, I love that. That one's by Asmodee. We have reviewed that one, and so please feel free to go back and check that one out. And I really like it too, Scott. I'm glad you liked it a lot. I really should have gotten that one to the table with you sooner, because I feel like that sits right in a really good spot for you.
Yeah.
Of a game that you would like. So I'm glad you got to have that one to the table. So part of our shtick with coming to this convention that we've been doing for 3 years now is we teach games when we go. And so we participate in the Game of the Hour, which I think is one of the best mechanics that you can have at a smaller convention. It helps people kind of get comfortable. Newer people or newer gamers are able to have someone teach them games, and they're games that are usually lighter. And so it's a way to kind of get you started. So I want to talk about a few of those. So we taught Sea Scroll by Renegade. And Sea Scroll is a simple schools of fish collecting game where you are trying to have the most of specific numbers to be able to score those points. And these numbers are from like 4 to 12, which indicates how many points you get if you have the most in that school number. And you also know how many cards are in the deck based on the number on the card as well. So, for example, the fours, there are four of them, and they will get you 4 points if you are tied or have the most. Simple game, you know, plays in 15 or 20 minutes. And the way it works is you draw some cards, so you're managing your hand as well as pulling schools from the middle to your particular tableau. You can only have 3 schools in front of you at the end of the game, so you have to kind of time it right as to when you're going to take one of those schools, because at the end of your turn, you're discarding to add one more card to one of those schools or making a new pile. And it creates this interesting tension of, are you going to take that? What do you have in your hand? How are we going to manage this? And it's only 15 or 20 minutes, but there's some fun decision aspects that come into that. Very easy to learn, easy to pick up and kind of jump right into. I think we had a lot of success with that one, and everyone seemed to be able to jump in. And it plays up to 6. And it's very interesting. We were practicing playing this game before we came, and we played a lot of it at 3, and we hadn't seen it at 6, but it plays so differently depending on your player count, because that deck runs out so much faster.
6 was great.
It was very
really. Yeah, it was fun.
So,
and it's got other cards in there you can add that change the basic rules and make it feel even more chaotic and fun. So I think it's a good one.
Yeah, for sure. So next up is Propolis from AEG. So Propolis is all about building medieval beehives. And it's got a very interesting mechanic where there's basically one deck of cards with a few extras as far as buildings that you can buy. And then you've got your own personal resource tracker that you have in front of you. And there's 5 different resources along with a wild, and you're spending these various resources to buy different buildings. But to do that, you have to go down and collect more resources by committing worker bees to these various spots. And there's 3 rows with a bigger player count. You've got 4 cards per row. And the idea is that you are trying to not only get the resources that you want, but you're also trying to collect majority so that you can get some additional bonuses as those rows fill up. And so it's a fun little game. It takes about 30 to 45 minutes where you are, like I said, you're just collecting those resources. You're buying the right kind of buildings that score off of each other. And then whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. There is one particular building that you can only get once per game, the Queen's Palace. And that one is very interesting because you have to, it's almost kind of like a Splendor mechanic where the buildings that you're buying most of the time, some of them have permanent resources in the top left-hand corner, and you need a certain amount of permanent resources to be able to buy the Queen's Palace. And so I really enjoyed the almost revamping of what Splendor did, but in a very different way and adding a little bit of worker placement to it. So this was also a fun game that I saw people not only playing during the game of the hour, but then there were lots of tables that had this after that throughout the rest of the weekend.
When I played Propolis, I was impressed by how quickly it played for a worker placement. Sure. And how streamlined it was, because there was what you could plan around and get your workers back without having to take a whole action to recall them. You could do that, but there were ways to get them back other ways too. And so I didn't feel stuck in this like I have in some worker placements, which I appreciated about the game.
So Scott mentioned High Society already. We taught that one as well. That one was chaotic fun, and I think everybody had a good time with it. And then another one that we did was a roll and write called Roar and Write, where you are trying to appease this council of animals. And you're rolling one set of dice, and you're going to use those numbers to determine where you're going to put them on your sheet. And from there, at the end of each round, you are basically bringing an offering before the council, trying to appease one of the council members. Now, as you play, you're trying to score the most points through doing this, and there's a variety of different ways to do that. And in my opinion, watching this play out and watching the different people play, checking rules, things like that, I think there's a good game in here. But the struggle that we had is it was a highlight of we really need the rule book to be a little bit more clear on a few things. We had a lot of discrepancy, a lot of discussion about that. But I would say that as we continued teaching the game, we saw more and more people say, I liked that. And so it, for me, it just really highlighted a rule book is really important when it comes to making these games, even the simpler ones. And then finally, one of my favorites that we've been playing recently, Estate Raise the Realm. We just did a review of it not too long ago, and it was a play to win at this convention. And I had so many people tell me, once they stood up, that this was their favorite game of the day, and this had a really good time with it, as far as, you know, building out your kingdoms, using those workers to do various things, like we've talked about before. But it was just such a highlight for everybody, and I was really happy to see that and continue to show more people this game. So those were the games that we taught on the weekend, and it was fun to see both during that hour, but then also as we would walk back into the main gaming area, you'd see those games coming back out again by the same people because they wanted to get it back to the table.
Yeah, and teaching games is always a highlight for us, I'd say, just because I think teaching games makes them more accessible to people. It's only a certain kind of person that can sit down with a rule book and figure out a game. And man, every gaming group needs one of those people, right, that does the heavy lifting and does that. Also, there's great how-to-plays, but there's something special about having a game spread out in front of you. Somebody that knows the game is teaching it to you, and then they're there to answer questions. So it's always really special for us. We get to meet a lot of people. We get to form relationships, and I feel like we get to put the games kind of in their best light when we do that.
Absolutely. I will say, like, teaching is one of the highlights of my weekend every time we do this.
Yeah, me too.
I almost enjoy it more. I just get so psyched to be able to show people how to play a game, how to get into it, watch their faces light up as they figure it out. Like, it's just such a joy. And especially people that are, like, I think there were several games I had where there was a father-son combo that was hanging out with us, and I think it was their first time. And I just really enjoyed watching them get into the games and discuss and all that. So, no, it's super fun. All right, well, do you guys have any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
I don't have anything.
Thanks, Scott.
I'm trying to think of a Douglas fir joke, but I don't got
Oof.
Anything.
Yeah, that moment's passed, Scott. We've already done it.
Nope, he's going to think of one. Just let him cook.
All right. Well,
no, I can.
Go ahead.
I mean, just that we keep driving out to Knoxville because we really like this convention. And I think that Mike and the people that help him, that put it on, do a really great job. And so just a lot of work goes into that. And so thank you to all of them for making a great 3 days for all the rest of us that get a benefit from it.
For sure. Thank you to Mike and Hope. Both of y'all do a great job, and looking forward to talking soon and seeing what else we can figure out. So with that, thank you all for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the convention, a convention that you are going to soon, or any of the games that we talked about today, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at the Game Table Podcast at thegametablepodcast.com. Or shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find Ian and I on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. Scott, are you on BGG?
I am.
Nice. So you can find Scott there too.
I'm not.
I know. 5-star reviews, subscribing your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Also, we're on YouTube. Not for this episode, because we're in a freaking car and we don't need to be having video, but...
I think it's against the law, actually.
Normally, maybe we'll invest in a dash cam one day. Who knows?
There you go.
But for today, it's just a podcast. But normally, we are also on YouTube. So subscribing there, liking, telling all your friends, whatever it may be, we would love that. And special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for the new rebranded cover art, to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music, although I think I'm just... we're going to do... This is old school. We haven't been doing the intro because of YouTube. Got to get right back into it. But this is just a podcast, so we got an intro and outro today. Love that. And finally...
Jared's just stream of consciousness right now. Yeah.
Join us later this week as I focus on our first solo game only review, Unstoppable. In the meantime... May your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye.
Bye.
What, no joke?
I got nothing.
I riffed for so long in that outro. Unbelievable.